Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I'm joined on the political left by co-host Shireen Gourbani.
Nice to be with you.
Great to have you, Shireen. And on the political right, co-host Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
We are excited to talk about politics and current events.
Why do I wave when I say hello to people?
You're just letting people know you're glad they're here.
It's like I raise my hand to say hello as though they're my
Dan,
neighbor.
Dan, the spirit is good in the studio today. There's a lot of goodwill. Presidential election, we have polls always coming out, but we're starting to see Michael Bloomberg, who visited Salt Lake City. What did he say is going to make Utah blue state?
Yes. Yeah, he
did. That's a pretty big comment.
Yeah, that was like, you know, roundhouse kick to the face.
But the news would be what? That Biden's on top, mm-hmm. then Sanders, mm-hmm. then Warren, and Bloomberg has moved into the four spot.
Yeah.
Quick commentary from both of you.
That's what money gets you.
Okay. Okay. And he's got it.
He's got it.
Do you think his message is resonating?
I do. Uh-huh. I also think aggressive ad campaigning, so raising so much of it is name ID. Who is this person? What are they standing for? What are they going to talk about? He has been able to get on just huge, huge media buys on mm-hmm. so many stations. People are seeing and interacting with that. And I do think people are hungry for an alternative to the current president.
Okay. And the current slate of Democratic candidates. Just
potentially.
For some. Yeah,
yeah.
For some in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, what's your reaction to Bloomberg getting the four spot?
Shireen is right. Like, it's interesting. You show up and you're a billionaire, right? Mayor of New York, you've got some mm-hmm. political chops and you've got some corporate experience. He spent $250 million in advertising across the country. That's a big number, right? To be this early, to be that saturated, and to be appearing in a bunch of like early Super Tuesday states, it's really, really aggressive. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think it's pretty impressive.
He has always intrigued me.
Really?
Yes. And in part, I remember when he was mayor, he had an open office, open workspace. Mm. Do you remember some of the stories
Which
about that?
Which would be miserable.
Well, I'm just kind of going, usually, you know, the top person has the corner office and is isolated from everyone else. And he had this open office, and there was some written about that. He also used to ride the subway to work. Now, in New York, that makes sense. But, you know, I don't think, you know, a lot of the elected officials ride the subway to work in New York City.
Yeah. You know, he was recently here, and I had the opportunity to hear him speak a little bit and thinking about really having a record of moving the needle on some things that really matter, whether it's an aggressive approach to solving homelessness. There's been a lot of work done in New York City around that. Thinking about work that was done to improve failing schools, that happened as well. There's also a really complicated history with stop and frisk and some of the things that were happening that feel like they targeted certain communities to a great number of people. So it's a real mixed bag, but I do think he's got an interesting record of being able to get things done. And I feel like that's what we're missing often in this administration. There's a lot of chaos and there's a lot of ineffective kind of just blowing of hot air. And I do think people are tired of that.
Stay tuned on Bloomberg. I want to make one local connection. Mm. I noticed that his ads are saying, Mike will get it done. Have you seen this?
I have not.
Okay, well,
I don't watch ads anymore.
It's interesting to me because that's what Greg Hughes has done.
Oh,
get
it
done.
Yeah.
And I'm sure without either of them knowing, they came to the same kind of mantra, Mike will get it done and Hughes's get it done.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe they're kind of similar characters. One other bit of national news. New York Times, pretty early, is coming out with some endorsements for Senator Amy Klobuchar and Senator Elizabeth Warren. I don't know. That was kind of odd, both the timing and the two paired up like that.
Mm.
Dan?
Anytime. I always think it's weird when newspapers get involved in elections this, I say early, but really we've been at this for a year, so maybe it's
and
not
I
early.
I was around the corner.
But for them to stick their head out of the foxhole on an issue that they are clearly, I like Klobuchar, and I think she is a very intelligent lady mm-hmm. and a very mm-hmm. smart senator, all those things. She is not getting traction in her own party. When you can be leapfrogged after a year of campaigning by Mike Bloomberg mm-hmm. up to number four in the polls, that tells you is, and you know, you saw some of the give and take also. You know, some of the candidates who are not serving in the U.S. Senate currently were kind of poking at those who had to go and, you know, do, you know, they wanted to be in Iowa. And so they shouldn't have to be in the impeachment hearings. Mm-hmm. And Klobuchar had a great comeback, which was, I can multitask.
Yeah.
You know, that, which I thought was great.
It was sharp.
But that kind of thing, I don't understand the New York Times. I don't understand their movement. It just doesn't make any sense.
What do you make of it, Shireen?
So I think people should go out and read it. There are a number of very interesting pieces that kind of set up the argument. They talk about, you know, really feeling like an institution like the New York Times, which often falls back on maybe a safe choice, right? A more traditional choice. They actually said in it, and I wrote this down because I thought it was so interesting, that they are currently rattled by the weakness of the institutions that they trusted to undergird our democracy, feeling like our elections are less safe, free, and fair, feeling like our Congress and our courts are becoming incredibly partisan. They talk about just the deluge of money in politics, and then also feeling like economic mobility that made the American dream possible for so many is just falling out of reach for more and more people. And so their sort of ground is shifting, and the way they're talking about these two candidates, I think, is incredibly interesting. And I will say that by the end of it, right, there's just one sentence, and it says, "May the best woman win." And from a person who's just, you know, entering into politics and thinking about women in politics in a state where we have very few women, actually, seeing more and more at municipal levels and that opportunity for growth in our state legislature, it gave me chills. And I do think that we have to really be asking ourselves, are we interested in the ongoing sort of chaos and eroding of the institution that this president brings, or are we willing to look at something else?
Well, and even further, I mean, that's a great point that you made, and it does help color my background. I wish we'd started with Shireen. The thing I thought about when you were talking about that is, you know, if you look at some of the other candidates, this is also somewhat of a poke at Bernie, right? Because Bernie Sanders said a woman can't win this, or at least as reported to have said, allegedly said, right? And so with that kind of commentary, for the New York Times to come out, grab someone who I think would be a strong institutional person, which is Amy Klobuchar, or Senator Klobuchar. So it's just, for me, I like that color. I like that story. Yeah. It's very well thought out.
I don't have a lot to add here. I will say that when Senator Hatch had his big farewell dinner in Washington, D.C., I happened to be at that. Mm. And boy, it was a big, big party, about as big of a ballroom as D.C. can put on. And Senator Klobuchar spoke at it.
Yeah.
And for me, it was the first time I'd really, you know, sort of, I don't know, imprinted her in my mind at what a well-rounded sort of middle ground person she was.
I think we're in stormy times. And, you know, I will always look to Midwesterners to fare the weather. I think that there's something about that. I grew up in North Dakota, as I've mentioned before, and feeling like there's something about that kind of hardiness and stability that I think is attractive to people. And I do think, kind of back to, you know, your comment about Bloomberg jumping, you know, so far ahead of her, we have to look at the dollars there. I mean, that is really, that is an outcome of having millions of dollars that you can pump into a nationwide ad campaign. She doesn't have that. I am really interested in the core arguments that Warren is putting forward about the things that are wrong in our democracy, and in particular, some of the ways in which our economy, our country is rigged against sort of everyday people being a part of politics. These are two really compelling candidates. And I think everyone, especially in the chaos that we get from the current administration, it would be served well to just take a look.
Yeah, I think we're saying to listeners, give it a read.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great, Shireen. I want to take you to China for just a minute. The coronavirus. So this is getting a lot of early press, maybe the beginning of a pandemic. I served at the Department of Health and Human Services with Secretary Leavitt. This was when the bird flu was making its rounds. But I can tell you that every morning we would get a report in the secretary's office of how many new cases had been identified. And then when the case, when they decided that they were going person to person instead of animal to person, that became a big deal.
Yeah.
And then you can just watch, in a pandemic, you can watch it start to move country to country. So I don't know, Dan, have you been tracking this a little bit, coronavirus?
I started, you know, paying attention to the reports just because it's very centric in it's a China element. And they're talking about, you know, it's bringing forward some of the rural issues in China, which is really, really interesting to read, having lived in, you know, kind of parts of rural India at times in my life. So it's really interesting to see, you know, that element and the ability for something like that to spread quickly. It's like, that's what I was going to ask you from the Department of Health standpoint.
Oh, it was fascinating.
When they model these things and how they spread, that's got to spook you.
We're talking about institutions and how important they are. Yeah. So the World Health Organization and the U.S. government together are huge partners in taking care of things like this. And it's just a magical thing to see modern medicine and science brought to bear.
What, from your perspective, is the most important thing for people to do if they're looking for information?
I think go to the CDC.
Yeah.
The CDC is an incredible source of information.
And it's, I mean, unbiased, unpartisan, that kind of thing. Yeah. That's not the part that matters. It's like, it's most current and it's most factual.
They represent our interests.
Not about fear.
And it's the most respected, you know, research entity on disease control in the world.
Does the CDC, is it a little bit of a bureaucracy? Like, is it hard for them to, because there's the worry but that they'll be too alarmist. Is that?
Yeah. Do you know, CDC is interesting. They're located, headquartered in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people know that. And so
I only know it because of The Walking Dead.
Yes, me too.
Well, when I was at HHS, you know, it was just we had Medicaid and Medicare and the mm-hmm. FDA and you know, all sorts of things that we did in Washington, but CDC was down in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And when the CDC director was in the Humphrey building, it was a big deal. Hmm. So, hey, we're going to talk about local issues in the second segment. I'm with Shireen Gurbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Big week for the tax reform referendum. The promoters of it are basically saying we did it.
Yeah.
They don't know for sure, but they turned in, 152,000 signatures?
They're saying 170,000 now.
Okay.
And they're saying, and in addition, they're saying, and I guess the last 20,000 was all Shireen.
Dancing my way through Harmon's.
But the most interesting stat of that is they're saying that it's a 94% acceptance rate on a signature, which for those of you who've never been involved in signature gathering, mm-hmm. you go out and you got to make sure somebody's a registered voter, they're at that existing address, and you got to fit all of those things into the puzzle. 94%
huge,
is ridiculous.
Because normally maybe in the 60s?
60s, 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that will change as more are coming
Absolutely.
In because this last weekend...
It's sloppy at the end.
Exactly. And in the beginning, they really were being very diligent, checking the IDs, looking people up in the voter file. And I think this is actually a good plug for everyone. You should go check. So go to vote.utah.gov. You can put yourself in, make sure you're registered at your current address. 2020 is a year you want to be registered at your current address. I think it's always a great year to be registered to vote.
Brought to you by the elections in the state of Utah.
Yes. But you can go in and check in. And they were doing that very diligently. And by the end, there were often longer lines. People were not interested in necessarily waiting. And so they moved it a lot quicker to kind of just going through asking the questions of, you know, verifying who they were and if they'd been registered to vote and then getting people to sign. So I think that'll change.
Yeah.
Well, but do all three of us think that there's enough signatures for this to be on the ballot? What do you think,
Dan? I did not think so last week.
And you think so this week?
This week, I think so.
Okay. And I'm leaning that way. I was really skeptical. Even, you know, people that have called and I've said, oh, just wait till they start checking those. But when I hear what you're saying, a couple of things. And Shireen, just bear with me here as I share this. I had been frustrated at the lack of information, you know, that people had as they were doing this.
Yeah.
The one that bothered me the most was the tripling, the line that there was a tripling of the sales tax rate on food.
Yes.
Because it's not true. It's 1.75.
Right.
And a tripling would be 5.25.
Yeah.
And they raised it to 4.85. Mm-hmm. So I'm a public finance person. The difference between 4.85 and 5.25 on a tax.
Big number.
Is huge. So I calculate it.
Yeah.
It's a $30 million difference. So it's an overstatement of $30 million. Now, I'm only sharing that as one example of how hard this has been because you try to do something very surgical that's good for the state. Mm-hmm. Hence, it passed.
Yeah.
At least people felt like it was good for the state. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
Now we've got a situation where you got to work with this. And my thinking is that the public sent a really important message that needs to be listened to. So even as I'm frustrated by the quality of the information, I think it was a really important voice. Yeah. So
I will actually say, I think lack of information is a really key portion of all of this, right?
Sure.
So people feel like, and when you're out there talking with individuals, I collected many signatures. People felt like when they did go and participate in the hearings that were conducted, or the community outreach that was conducted across the state, that it was not an opportunity for lawmakers to listen to the public. They felt like they were told what they had to be there early to get their name on a list, if they were able to get their name on a list, and there was long lines for that. A lot of people got left out of the conversation. They felt like it was not a listening tour, but rather a telling tour. And that was something that really bothered people.
Yeah.
There was an ongoing sense of, and I think this is really a larger argument about why we should just be like so aggressively talking about the need for civics education to be more robust in our schools. Really understanding this and really understanding tax policy is something that I think no one has ever been interested in. And now they are. And it's such a great opportunity and moment.
Yeah, great point. It's super important. Dan, I want to get your voice in here, but I found myself saying we're asking the wrong question. Okay. So everyone's asking the question, should there be a sales tax on food?
Yeah.
And the real question, I think, is how do we have fewer poor?
Yeah.
And I thought that the tax policy tried to do a lot of things to help the poor. You know, giving a tax cut to seniors on fixed incomes, the earned income tax credit for intergenerational poverty. And for the first time in our state's history, no sales tax on food because we're going to give it all back to you through a credit for the poor. You only get it once a year, you know, all that kind of thing. But
so in conversations with Republicans that I was collecting signatures with, the question that I kept hearing was, how do we slow down our corporate welfare? At what point are we going to decide that the money that we continue to give away to large corporations in the state would be better put into programs that support the poor?
Fewer poor among us.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big argument.
We need to get your voice in here, and then I want to propose a solution.
We're going to get 7 weeks of my voice. I mean, and I get a vote like crazy, but okay, fine. You know, I applaud. I'm going to step back. I think what the referendum gatherers, whoever was corporal, you know, ushering this thing through, I will say they did a pretty spectacular job of organizing, just because I know how tough that is to do. One. Two, usually it takes $1 million to do something like this. And last I saw, they spent less than $40,000.
Yeah. Mostly
an important voice came out.
Okay. Now, the question is, what do you do? Because to Shireen's point, the conservative Republicans are saying something. The liberal Democrats are saying something.
Strange bedfellows.
Strange fellows, but they are saying different things.
Sometimes.
And so the interesting element that we're trying to balance is, what is the people's voice? We get it. That bill's bad. Fine. Because I don't know where you stand on this, Natalie or Shireen. I think if this thing goes to the ballot in November and it's not repealed before that, it's going to fail 1 million votes. To 60, and like those that voted for it in the legislature might vote for it.
Who wants to spend all that money and stuff doing that? Let's let our legislators fix this.
I agree.
So back to my question, how do we have fewer poor among us? See, to me, that opens up all sorts of important discussions. What do we do with higher ed access?
Housing. You
know, what do we do with housing? What do we do with, education reform? What do we do to target our policies better? How do we fix education governance? I mean, it just leads to all these things. And I hope Dan, I hope you spend time on that in this session. So here's my solution. I think you all in the legislature should repeal the tax law in the first week. I think you should create another bill that does all of the good things that this bill did. I think you should restore the 1.75, or, you know, keep the sales tax on food just like it is. Acknowledge that the public had an important voice there. And I think you give the legislature 10 days to finish this so you can get on with the session.
Yeah.
And then what would happen, by the way, is by not having the full sales tax on food, the base is narrow, so you got to have a higher rate. So we come out with a higher sales tax, a lower income tax, keep the EITC, keep the Social Security tax cut, keep the gas tax increase, because that's important for air quality and driving.
Tampon tax exemption?
What about the
My
corporate
wife hates
welfare?
That, by the way. Okay. She hates that thing.
Okay. Well, we get too into tax policy, but that's what I think. The key thing is acknowledge the public sentiment that has been expressed, acknowledge or keep the good that's in the bill, make some adjustments, but finish it in 10 days.
Yeah. Okay.
You're in?
Any chance?
I think we do need to repeal it in the first week. There's a bunch of reasons why. But one of the reasons that is really interesting is an issue that the press actually identified today, which is there's a gap. The bill will go into effect 60 days after enactment, 60 days after enactment, so the bill will go into effect. And then there will be a gap between that and the 90 days after the referendum has to be certified. So there is a time period by which we could mail out all the checks to make all the reimbursements if we follow the law. So we kind of have to, if we're going to unravel this thing, we got to unravel it quickly.
Quick.
And then we
got to
hurry
takes,
and put something back that replaces it.
I think there's a larger conversation, though, happening in our community that is, it came to a head on this. Mm-hmm. And I think had unusual kind of bedfellows because of tax policy and the way people feel about taxes here. But the larger conversation happening across grocery stores when I was there was this feeling about what happened with Prop 2, what happened with Prop 3,
yeah.
And feeling like overall that distance between sort of your neighbor who might be a Democrat and you who are a Republican and the distance between you both and your legislator are completely different,
yeah.
Right?
And I just want to put words to that. So Medicaid expansion and medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana.
Okay, keep going.
I'm
going to
add a bill. So you have that feeling, right? And then you have the highly usually organized and also very, they're just very interested and I would say almost zealous-like about the caucus convention process.
Oh, yeah.
So you had on the far right, they were super angry about SB 54 and the legislature never listens to them there. And then you had the left who were frustrated about Prop
medical
2
marijuana.
And 3
yeah.
And, you know, medical marijuana and Medicaid.
Though many Republicans voted for that as well.
Yeah, we won't judge them. But that being said, I'm just kidding.
But, so you will judge them.
Yeah. I will judge them. No, I voted for them too. I'm just saying, though, if you look at some of those elements and you say, you add up that big totality of pictures, I think I understand there's a frustration.
Yep. Yeah. Dan, if you were to set up the 2020 session, other than tax reform, which we've just given a whole bunch of time to, what should listeners be expecting? Starts on Monday.
Yeah, I think there will be a lot of work done this legislative session, hopefully on this corporate welfare element that we talk about, right?
Okay.
How to clean up that process, how we make sure from an oversight standpoint that matters.
Increased transparency?
One, absolutely. Number two, I think you're going to see a lot of interest in how the budget works this year, which people have not cared about in the past, but they will this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard that from a lot of people. What are they cutting? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be that
That's
influence
good.
As well. So the budget will play a bigger role than it usually does. And from a policy standpoint, I know this is crazy. I don't know. Outside of taxes, I do not know yet what the percolating issues will be. I will tell you that the resolution that prohibits the removal of offensive Native American symbols from stuff, that won't be an important policy issue. I will tell everyone that. That will hopefully just die on its own sitting out there. They just made this big article about that this last week, and I'm like, why are we talking about that?
We're down to about 3 minutes on the show, so I'm going to be really quick here.
Are you going to pass the ERA?
Well, Dan, I'll let you answer that.
I don't have an answer on that because
okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Thomas Wright was public with his running mate, Congressman Rob Bishop. Who knew?
Have you ever seen anybody come out this early?
No. I think that something big happened, though, because Thomas Wright got the name ID of Rob Bishop mm-hmm. associated with him. And Rob Bishop brings public lands, brings rural Utah, brings federal government expertise.
In spades.
And brings education expertise as a former teacher. So, Shireen, quick comment from the left?
Not much to say about that.
Wait, is there a Democrat in the race yet?
Not that I'm ready to talk about.
there might be someone.
So, what I'll say is...
Like
Let me quickly just jumping back to what just happened with the referendum on tax reform, thinking about the strides that we've made in this state, and I think the ways in which voting and access to voting is very good in this state, thinking about the next lieutenant governor as somebody being in charge of that is something that's really important to me. So I want to know where Bishop stands on voting rights. Like, what is he going to do to increase and really champion that elections office? That's critically important. I think it's something that's really special that's happening here in a red state where in other red states we're seeing people really working aggressively to get people off the rolls. So that's something I'm concerned about. When I think about Bishop's views on public lands, that's not somebody that I would like in leadership on my side of things, right? And nor education.
Dan, did the pick surprise you at all?
No, not at all.
I
knew that Rob was out there as one of the people that people were trying to get.
To be
and
an LG.
Thomas, to your point a couple weeks ago, which is Thomas is going to have some kind of something.
Keep an eye on him.
Every week.
Yeah, for sure. We need to go to gripes. Dan, do you have a gripe ready?
Yeah, I do. I will say that Most people don't think about it this way, but as the legislative session draws closer, I can feel the control over my life disappear. And that is probably, we'll talk about that more. But anyways, that's my gripe.
Shereen.
I'm having a hard time with gripes, so I'm going again with gratitude. I'm grateful that we are the 19th state to ban conversion therapy.
That's nice. I would agree with that. I'm going to go with the gripe. I don't like that people are calling these secret bills that the legislature has. I guess of the 410 that have been filed, 106 are secret. I think it's just fine for people to have their bills be confidential till they're ready.
Yeah, why not?
You got to get the coalition going.
But see, the press, they like to make it sound
secret
terrible.
Secret bills. It's like calling
special. Because they're the ones who want to write the stories about
special interests. Why can't they call them community interests? You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Dan McKay and Shereen Gorbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.